Welcome to the Fit 40 podcast, where we take all the confusing, conflicting fitness and nutrition information and break it down so that you can live your healthiest, strongest, most energized life. I'm your host, Brian Fitzsimmons. Let's get it started. All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. We have another awesome guest with us. We have Robert Linkle in the house. He is the founder of Training the Older Adult, or TOA. He's got over 20 years experience, got his master's degree in personal training, two NSCA certifications, and years of rehabbing his own body from injuries like hip replacement, sciatic, carpal tunnel, lung cancer. And I have no doubt between all of this experience with himself and clients, he's going to be so fun to pick his brain and leave you guys with a ton of actionable tips. So Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here. Appreciate it.
Hell yeah. Well, so before we dive into everything, because I know, like you said, like you have a pretty big injury history and you've got a big history with training those that also do. Before we dive down all of that, I'm curious, before the injuries and all that, what got you into fitness? What started your whole journey?
I was a discus and a hammer thrower, and I actually started throwing the shot put in like fifth grade. I was a super chubby, unathletic kid and couldn't find any sport that I really wanted to get into or be passionate about. And got into fifth grade and middle school, like my second or third day, they take us outside and I got to pick up a shot put and throw it. And I was like, man, that was fun. And I met our summertime, like off league track coach, Anthony, Coach Davis. And he befriended me and befriended our family and started taking me. I joined the team and we started throwing all over the state. And I picked up the discus 2 days or 2 years later. Once we get into seventh grade, you could throw the discus, and then progressed into high school, was nationally ranked, earned a scholarship, took me to CSU Sacramento, where I threw the hammer as well and became nationally ranked as a hammer thrower, was picked up by Reebok and threw for Reebok for 2 years in the pursuit of the 2008 Olympic Games. And in my efforts to kind of get into that, and my lack of having a coach who knew weights really well, Coach Davis knew track and field, but not really the weight room. I did all kinds of damage in my body, just not really knowing what to do. So before we get into injuries, it was just a passion for wanting to be a good athlete, but not being like terribly gifted. So I had to figure out a way. So I'm reading, you know, Encyclopedia Bodybuilding with Arnold, as almost every young trainer and young coach. I was getting into that and reading just any book, we have the Long Strong Thrower Journal. We had a couple of other resources, but no internet at the time. Like I was just whatever I could get my hands on, you know, muscle and fitness magazines and Powerlift magazine, and just taking pieces of everything and trying to kind of piece together something that would make me a better athlete. And in doing that, instead of picking one, I kind of did them all and just destroyed my body. So a lot of what not to do by my own experiences, but an obsession for moving iron around, moving weights around was born, and then drastically redirected as injuries occurred.
Yeah, that's the natural progression, right? We see all this stuff and we're like, I want to just do it all at the exact same time. Yeah. What could go wrong?
Exactly. that's, without a coach to say like, don't do that. This one's too heavy, or why don't you take some more recovery time? I want to get better. So I just kept going. And before I knew it, like I'm getting hip replacements and back surgery, and I wasn't even 40 yet. So I definitely learned a lot what not to do. But we need direction and we need mentors and we need podcasts and information like this for the next generation to kind of hear the story and go, oh man, yeah, maybe I'm kind of listing in that direction. Maybe I should seek out somebody to help me and make sure I don't make these same mistakes or make these injuries either with myself or with other clients, you know, do no harm. Like that is our very good friend of mine, Gary Schofield, mentions that at the beginning of every presentation that he does. And he's like, we can't lose sight of that. You know, you got to keep that close to the chest and like, remember what the purpose is here. We want to make people jump, you know, higher and bench press more or look better in their bathing suits or age more gracefully or whatever it is we're pursuing. But that step one is let's not make them any worse, you know, and it's experiences like this and getting to talk with people like you and sharing our stories that hopefully makes that next generation a little bit wiser to it. and so on and so on as we go. So
absolutely.
Yeah, happy to be on here and get to share some of these with you and hopefully learn from others that are part of this as well.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought that up because that doesn't get talked about enough, the do no harm. Hmm. Because it's like when you talk about doctors, they literally have to take an oath saying that they're not going to do any harm. But then when it comes to somebody who's in like preventative side of things like us, like all of a sudden it's like, what can we do without breaking you? Seems to be like the thing that a lot of people start with. But we really got to come at it with a lens of like, all right, let's make sure that we get out of here without hurting ourselves first and foremost. So when you got hurt in your particular situation, what did that look like as far as like recovery and then transitioning to being able to do the things that you did prior, or did training change? How did that whole thing look?
I'll try to keep it relatively short because there's a lot of it to download, yeah. But 2008, pursuing that Olympic team, I was having multiple back injuries just throughout my career. I was working with a chiropractor. I would get regular adjustments. I mean, almost every other day, just so I could simply bend over and pick up the hammer to throw it again, let alone train. Like I was in just really bad shape, but I just needed to finish the season and try to hold my ranking and then pursue the next year. So I do that. I take some time off and start of our season in 2008. It's my very first training session back, and I was a 550-pound back squatter at the time. And so I go into this gym with my wife. She was a manager and basically kind of allowed me to come into this newly remodeled weight room. It was a brand new squat rack. No one had ever trained in it before. I was going to be the first one. So I put 135 on there. I do 10. This is my normal regular progression, 225. I'm on like my fourth or fifth rep coming up. And I feel my L4, L5, L5, S1 disc, both of them just displaced laterally. Ooh. And I know I'm hurt, like more than any injury that I have experienced in the past. I know I'm hurt, but I'm at the bottom of this squat. And my first thought is, don't drop these plates. They're brand new. Like I can't bail and just dump them. So I make myself come up out of the squat. I rack the bar and I'm on my back in seconds. In the next 90 minutes, I can't get up. I'm stuck there. So my wife Keegan's up at the front and she's just thinking I'm having a kick-ass workout. I'm just back there for 90 minutes and the gym opens. She starts checking people in and the members have to come down and like they find me and they help me up and I waddle up to the front and I'm like, I'm hurt. I've hurt myself. And she's like, you throw your back out all the time. Like, you know what to do, go home and ice and do your thing. So 3 days go by and I can't sleep. I can't get comfortable. I start having some neurological issues with controlling my movements, if you know what I mean. And that's when you know you're in bad shape with a back injury.
Yep.
And so that happens and I go, I got to get to the hospital here. So emergency surgery, I have a discectomy to fix my back where they basically trim away the ruptured disc that has now, you know, bulged out and is causing all this discomfort. So as we progress from that, I was training to climb Mount Rainier as I had a client of mine that wanted to train all 7 summits in the world. And to help him, he goes, you got to know what I do. So let's come and do one of these. And he was going to help me pay for it and all that. So I go and I climb Rainier and I rehab my back to pursue that. And I go, this is great. You know, my throwing career is over. I've destroyed my back. Maybe I could do mountaineering. So as I'm training other clients and such to climb Mount Shasta, we were having a training session and I cough and I look at my hands and I've got spats of blood all over my hands from coughing. And I think this is not good. Like what is the deal here? So I go to the hospital and I'm in getting an x-ray. And normally with my back x-rays and such, it's days until we hear anything. I get in the parking lot and I'm leaving and they call me and they're like, come back. You got to come back right now. And so I go back in and I get a bronchoscopy, a camera up my nose, and they go into my lung and they find this carcinoid tumor that has taken over like 80 to 90% of my lung. And so I have to have this tumor removed. So they break open ribs and remove a couple and cut my lat, my intercostals, and they take my lung out and massive rehab and 9 months to get myself better from this. And I go back in for a second checkup, basically another scan. And in that scan, they find another tumor in my thyroid that has taken over my thyroid, my parathyroid. And is growing into my sternocleidomastoid into my neck. So we have to have that removed. And I have a couple of good years and then my hips really start to fail and I have to have arthroscopies on both hips. And then eventually I get my right hip replaced in 2016, and I get my left hip replaced later that year, and it dislocates like 7 times in one night. And there's a huge story that goes with that. But long story short is I have a full revision. I've had 17 surgeries. I've had a hernia repair, 3 different carpal tunnel and ganglion cyst and nerve relocation in my hand. And I've had a whole slew of different health ailments. And if you didn't know that I'm 43, but you know, in my 30s throughout that process, 43 now, and I just told you that list of stuff, you'd be like, that guy's 75, 80 years old, right? And that's kind of the uniqueness of my experience has been experiencing those older adult things at a relatively young age. And then you take a passion for learning about how to rehabilitate this and how to get somebody back from that, that I wanted to plug into myself. And then I blog and I write about it and I share my experiences. Other people hear that, they start to come. So now I get opportunities to take people with similar limitations mm-hmm. or challenges in life that I just went through that process and help them build back. And that's how TOA was kind of born. The whole idea is I'm a younger man with a passion for training, but I also went through these things. And if most people that are experiencing this are late 60s, 70s, 80s, I can really help kind of build them back to a point where most older pops that go through major surgeries like this, they don't recover even back to what they were, let alone any better. And our clientele does. They get back to at least where they were, if not a better version of themselves. And statistically, that's not the norm. And so, you know, at one point I had 100 to 140 clients between myself and our one other trainer, John. And we thought, okay, we keep working with these 140 people, or should we create something that will teach this to other trainers and they can branch out to their 30, 40, 50, 60 clients. And now we can affect a whole lot more. And that was the goal and kind of a side passion project. And then March 2020 comes around, and in California, it was, you know, St. Patrick's Day. And we get the call that all gyms are closing. And so we come home and we're like, well, what do we do now? And Keegan, my wife, goes, hey, why don't you look at this whole education thing as like an opportunity for trainers? Everybody's sitting at home. Like, why don't we push that to the forefront and let's get this going? And within a day, we had a full website. She's a total stud. I mean, she built a full website for our clients, a full website for our education business. Wow. And things just took off from there. And we started certifying trainers and doing webinars, and it just grew. And so we've been able to work with over 250 trainers. We have 18 TOA affiliates nationwide, one in Vancouver in Canada. So we're international. We have TOA trainers in Iceland and Ireland and England, Canada, US, Mexico. So, you know, we're growing and trying to affect and help as many people as we can. And it all stems from all those injuries and limitations and notes and research and everything and anything that I could put together, and awesome doctors and a great physical therapist and just a team of people that helped me get myself together. And we took those practices and those strategies and started implementing them with our clients, and we had great success. And then we turned that into a learning opportunity for other trainers.
Love that.
So hopefully they don't have to go through any of this, but they know what to do with people that are.
Yeah. And I got to say, out of everything that you just mentioned, the fact that your wife made websites that fast, that functional, that quick of a turnaround is the most impressive thing I've heard. That is wild.
She's something, man. Like, so, and here's our timeline. We get a call at 8 a.m. One of my clients that works inside not the White House, but the Capitol building. And they go, they're going to shut you down at noon. You got like 4 hours. You better figure out something. I call her and I tell her that. I get home at 6 o'clock, completely panicked. And she goes, check out this website. She built it in like 8 hours.
Wow.
We had a full website, Zoom capable. Like, I'd never trained anyone online before. All we did was this. We did presentations and webinars. I was very comfortable in front of the camera, but I hadn't trained anybody. I was an in-person trainer. I was like, there's no way. I'm never going to train people online. Now we train the majority of our clients online. They love it. You know, everybody's got a home gym, and our clients, they all log in and they, you know, I get a couple in here with me, and there's 5, 6, 7 other people online that are joining us every hour. And that's the majority of our training client business. Just everything changed. But she, on a dime, just turned that and created this, and is still the same way now. I'm like, hey, we need a new business card. In like 15 minutes, she comes in here and she's like, what do you think of this? I'm like, holy shit. Like, she's just, she's just something, man. She gives herself no credit for being amazing, and she's extremely well-rounded and educated, and is, you know, I'm just the guy in front of the camera. She runs everything else, does it all else. We're a good team.
Yeah. I mean, what an advantage having somebody like that, like that you can count on and rely on. She sounds absolutely like irreplaceable.
And she's right here. She's waving. She's smiling. Oh, she's giving me the finger.
That's how you know they're good. That's how you know you got a good one.
That's where I love you.
Did she just know you were talking about her? Like, I can sense it.
Her office is one window over. Like, she's right
okay.
next to me.
Okay.
You get a little separation so she can. We have a dog and our kids and such, and so they don't, you know, we don't get a ton of background noise when I'm doing this stuff. But they're right there, and we, you know, we do a lot of intermingling throughout the day. So yeah, she gets a little uncomfortable when I praise her and talk about how amazing she is.
Hey, with all that going on, she deserves it.
Yeah. Now through the pandemic, let's throw in, we're going to homeschool our kids and then started doing that too. So that's, you know, another feather in the cap for how awesome she is. But wow. Anyhow, that's been a huge part of our business is being able to, you know, we hate that word pivot, but it's like everybody uses it and kind of relates it to that time, you know? And at the time we're in complete panic mode and we're like, I don't know if this is going to work. And are we going to lose our life savings? And we were just watching our account just drain every month. And we ended up having to close the gym and redirect and do this. And it's been a blessing in disguise, but man, for 9 months there, we were completely panicked and had no idea if this was going to work or not. And it was kind of like the dream is I want to be able to do this, what we're doing right now, on a more professional level and make a living doing it. And, you know, 4 years later, here we are.
Yeah. It's wild how COVID, it was scary. Like I remember I was working in a gym and same thing, like where it's like, oh my God, we're going to have to shut the doors and all that. But it kind of almost like made it so that those who were meant to swim were swimming, and those who were who sank, like didn't really have a lot of substance, I guess you could say. Like the ones that stayed the course and survived, really, like it says a lot. If you know a gym near you or a service near you that survived through COVID, probably a good tell that they're a pretty solid business.
Well, I heard, I think Thomas Plummer, a couple others talk about 70% of our industry closed, you know, through that. I think we've had 20% or so that have come back. So basically 50% of our industry was lost, you know, through that. Now, if you kind of look at only 14% of our nation actually having a gym membership or participating in any variation of exercise, and then you cut the workforce in half, like how well are we serving people then, right?
Exactly.
We had 300,000 certified trainers, according to the IRS. And so let's say there's only 150,000 now. That leaves about 800 customers potentially for each of us, you know,
not
to pursue for people. And it's like, there's plenty of business out there. Yeah, it's like, we just got to grow it back and get back in front of people and start to make this a big priority again. And some people really did through the pandemic and most did not, though. We use the term sarcopenia, and it's actually what you reached out to me for was I want to talk about this. So sarcopenia is the loss of muscle mass. And people hear that and they go, well, you mean atrophy. You lose muscle mass to a point where you lose function. That's sarcopenia. And so the most simple version or image that you can envision is, you know, the typical older adult that has to take small shuffling little steps. They're rounded over and forward. They can't move their neck independent of their shoulders. Their body is just melting under gravitational tension and they're losing this battle. That is sarcopenia to a T. But that is not the case. You do not have to accept that as the fate. And you see this in anyone that has prioritized resistance training in their life. Jack LaLanne probably being one of the best examples. You know, being 5 foot tall, 5'11" or whatever he was in his prime, and being like 5'9" when he died at 96 years old, was still having less than 20% body fat and still having a deadlift record for every decade of life that he had into his 70s, 80s, 90s.
It's wild.
Swimming the open channel in San Francisco Bay, like doing all this. And you go, well, he must have been this gifted athlete. He was not. He was like a regular dude that did not have great genetics. Like neither one of his parents, from what I remember, were amazing athletes or anything. And so he had a hard work ethic and he put in the time. and anybody can do that, right?
Yep.
So we don't have to accept that we're all going to get sarcopenic and shrink and be frail and we're going to get killed by a fall, you know, when we trip in our house. But that is the leading cause of death for people over the age of 65 or 70 that's not heart related. You know, they fall, they break their hip or they break their back or they something. And within, you know, 3 to 6 months, their desire and will to live has disintegrated to the point where they just fade away.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. And you think like, well, that can't be that many people. It's a lot. 30 million people a year, you know, that go through getting those falls, and about half of those will die from those falls. So it's a significant chunk of people. It's a huge demographic. We're living longer. Mm-hmm. You know, our medical interventions are taking our average age of 69 to 71 to 74 to now 77 in the United States, at least in North America. And because we're living longer, we're not necessarily living a better quality. We're just not dying, right? So you might get to a point at 74 where you're bedridden and you are not able to go and leave your house even, but you're going to live for 4, 5, 6 more years. Where's the quality of life there?
Yeah.
What's the difference between that 78-year-old and the 78-year-old that's out on cruises and riding bikes and playing golf? Like, what happened? What's the difference? Is that genetics? Is that in DNA? Or did they put an effort and, you know, invest in good, healthy food and lift weights 3 or 4 times a week and go on walks every night? And so now that endeavor and the investment that they put in, 30s carried to 40s and 40s carried to 50s. And it's, you know, your ability to lose muscle mass and ability is going to be so slight as you progress. You'll be capable of doing any basic demands of life at 80 or 90. And hopefully just simply pass away in an hour or two, whenever that time comes. I don't mean to be morbid, but hey, you don't want to have this 3, 4, 5 years of decrepit and unable, miserable, dying. I want to be like 102 and heart attack and I'm gone. Right. And that leaves everybody that was a family member. There's like, we only have good memories of Rob, right? He was good. He was good. He was good. He was gone. As opposed to, I got to think back to when he wasn't in miserable pain, bedridden and stuck there. And I've seen both. My dad gone in 3 hours, Keegan's grandpa, you know, months in a facility. And it's, the latter's miserable. Like, I don't wish that on anybody. So you don't have to, this long rant, you don't have to accept that fate. Yeah. Nobody does, especially ladies. You're 3 times over more likely to get osteoporosis. You're 2 times over more likely to get sarcopenia, especially premenopausal. There's all kinds of bone issues come about due to undulations and change in hormonal response. And then through menopause, everything's going to go haywire. You're going to start to lose estrogen, the little bit of testosterone you have gone. And now as you clear, you know, through menopause, now you don't have any estrogen. So your ability to maintain muscle mass, bone density, all that, it's completely gone haywire. And along with that, everything else that you're going to deal with through that process. So the susceptibility to these injuries, to these diseases and such are very high. And the one thing that all the research points back to, other than good consistency intake on protein, is resistance training. Get strong, stay strong, never stop, never miss. Just, you have to stay strong no matter what the pursuit is. I want to look good, feel good, perform better, whatever it is. You have to be strong. You'll be that much more likely to achieve those things if you are.
Now, somebody listening,
I can talk forever.
Oh, no, that's okay. I love letting the guests go because this is like your personal soapbox. Is my show.
You have to do that.
But I love that you brought that up and the different changes that happen throughout the lifespan and the fact that you brought up lifespan versus health span, because a lot of people think, oh, I'm just going to be healthy until I die. And it's like, that's not what a lot of people are experiencing, especially now. But without going the morbid route, on an optimistic note, everything that you mentioned when it comes to like when women hit that menopausal age and then they're in postmenopause, like when men hit that point where they start to experience like the muscle loss, bone loss, that all being said, it doesn't mean that you just hit a point and you just can no longer build muscle or bone, right? So if somebody listening right now is 55, 60, and they're like, well, I'm a lost cause, what would you say to them?
No, there's still tons of time and you got to start right now. Not start at the end of the year or my birthday, right now, today, now you need to start. Clock's ticking, but you can definitely rescue yourself from this rather steep trajectory that you're on of decline. If you're 73, 74, 75, ship's sailing, unfortunately. If you haven't done anything to this point, statistically speaking. And Dr. Peter Attia talks about this in his book, Outlive. I absolutely love this. I just did a review on it on my YouTube channel. I've done a couple. It's highlighted as well, a lot of this information in the Chris Hemsworth special on Discovery called Limitless. He just signed for a second season of that, which is awesome. The first season brought me to tears, brought me to cheers, and everything else in between. Such a great show, but it all delivers this information that basically early investment in 20s, 30s will set you up to be great 20 to 30 years ahead of time. So if you want to be awesome at 80, you've got to start at 50 at minimum, okay? But if you don't do anything right around, if you don't do anything to invest, not, you know, eat well, sleep well, you know, lift, walk on a regular basis, less processed food, more sunshine exposure, grounding, all these good things, right? If you don't do any of that stuff, basically 71 to 75, your abilities just drop off a cliff. And it's like you don't last long. You go from I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm not okay, I'm completely dependent on someone else to do all of my activities of daily living for me. Dressing, toileting, transferring, carrying, all the basic things that we pride ourselves on being able to do on our own. You are now completely dependent on someone else to do that for you.
Yeah, I feel like when it comes to the independence, we just enjoy it and we take it for granted until it's gone.
Oh, for sure. I mean, let's just the idea of having my right hand three different times after surgery in a splint where I couldn't write and I couldn't wipe, to not be too graphic. I couldn't do any of the things that I normally do in my right hand was awkward as shit and really difficult for me to manage, right? Let alone the few times after major surgeries where I needed to ask my wife to help me with some of these things that, you know, you're not like terribly prideful of asking someone else to do or clean for you, or you 100% take that for granted. But the moment that you have to rely on someone else to do that, you go, oh man, I need to step up to, I don't have to do this again, yep. Right? Like I don't want to end up in that situation ever. I don't want to ever rely on anyone else to have to take care of me, let alone another individual or my kids. I never want to be that burden to my kids.
Yep.
I want to support my family members as they grow old, but I'd love them to be independent for as long as possible, right? So I wouldn't want to have to put any kind of burden like that on my child as we get older. So I'm investing hard into that now, 100%. And whatever that looks like for you, if you're not active at all, start something. Start walking daily. 10 minutes that way, 10 minutes back. If you're not lifting currently, start lifting for 10 minutes every other day. Like just get on the machines, just get weights moving around. Something that when you're done, your muscles go, that was not normal. That was something that was an overload. And so short rant on this, when we introduce weights to people, especially people that are nervous about lifting weights, here's their concern. I don't want to hurt myself, so I don't want to lift too heavy, okay? So they start using weights and they're usually pink or purple or light blue, something that's not intimidating. This is a industry standard that drives me crazy. Okay. In our gym, all the heaviest weights are pink and baby blue and all that.
That's awesome.
We pride all the heavy stuff. Yeah. We reverse all these stereotypes. So you start to lift 7.5 pound dumbbells and you're like, I don't want to do the tens. I'm going to get hurt. So my answer to this is I'm just going to do more reps. And do more reps and do more reps. And eventually you get an overuse injury, usually ending in itis, tendonitis, bursitis, some kind of itis. That means you overused it. So what ended up happening is you got hurt. Your original concern was, I don't want to get hurt. And what happened? You got hurt. Okay. So either way, either direction you're going with this, you're risking the opportunity for injury. You have about a 4% chance of getting hurt in any weight room, any exercise you do. It's about a 4% chance on average. Okay. Doesn't matter if it's too heavy, too light, too many reps, not enough. There's a 4% chance you're going to get injured. So why not look at the risk reward benefit of adding progressive overload and finding that Goldilocks sweet spot where it's not too heavy and I'm not doing too many reps. I'm just going to find that middle 70 to 80% or 7 or 8 out of an RPE of 10 rate of perceived exertion or something that's going to leave 4 to 6 reps of reserve in the tank. Something that's going to get you close to an overload that's challenging, but not to the point where you're like, I'm going to get hurt. and not to the point where I can do this for days and I'm going to get hurt. You're right in the middle. And so now my bones will respond and they'll get more dense. Okay. My osteoblasts and osteoclasts will have their little battle and I'll get more dense. And then my musculature is going to have to do something to overcome this new load. So my binding sites and my actin and myosin are going to start to either bind tighter or grow more binding sites and thus hypertrophically build more musculature. So I will get stronger. And in the same process of doing all that, if I continue to move at a decent rate through the gym while I do it, I can have a cardiovascular response and increase my VO2 max. So if I smoke or if I have diabetes, I increase my mortality rate by 40 or 50%. But if I'm weak, I increase it by 250%. If I have a low VO2 max, I increase it by 300%. So I can increase bone density, increase muscle mass, and improve my heart rate and my VO2 max and battle all my biggest concerns and not get hurt by finding that sweet spot in the middle. Why would I not do this on a regular basis for 20 minutes every other day? So that's an hour out of your week, 168 hours. I'm asking for one, right? And all it's going to do is benefit you. Hopefully, as you age, just never stop doing it. And my thought and my hope is you get kind of addicted to that. And you go, it feels good when I do this. So now my 20 minutes becomes 30, becomes 40. And maybe I level in at about 45 minutes every other day. And I walk on the other days and I golf and I play tennis or pickleball. And I go on trips and I live this great life because of that initial investment in the weights. That's where this can take you. That can be the benefit with as little as 20 minutes. And some of the research, 12 minutes a day.
Now, right? This goes against huge lifestyle. This goes against everything we're seeing in social media. I thought you had to go to the gym for hours on end. You got to be puking in buckets. Like you got to push a pedal to the metal. Otherwise you don't deserve your results. So that's not true.
No, there's a research study just came out in the Washington Post, like 2 months ago. Okay. 2.5 months ago. Well, the research study was done in December. The story came out in January. Okay. They took a group of older adults, 65 to 80. They've done studies with this age group, many, many studies, hundreds of studies. What they haven't done is studied 85 and older. Okay. So we have young people research, older adult, and then older adult. They put in a double older for the 85 and up. Across the board, they did five exercises. Took them about 12 minutes to go through those five exercises. They did it every other day. They did it for 8 weeks. They pre-tested in the middle and post-tested. Everyone got stronger. Everyone improved power. Everyone improved strength. Everyone improved stability. Everybody improved posture. Everybody felt better, performed better, increased sexual activity, increased cognition, their hydration levels. They slept more. They could think more clearly. They felt better through the day. They had better conversations, more active and willing to go out and do all of this from 12 minutes.
That's okay? Wild.
So imagine if you did like a real program that included more than just five machines, you know, and you organized that and progressed it specific to each person and their actual needs, not just everyone do these five. So they just wanted to look at this bare minimum. And they're like, okay, that would work great for young and for old, but what about the really old? Just as much improvement for those folks, just as much. So it doesn't matter the age. It doesn't matter the time investment of, other than you're introducing progressive overload. It has to be a challenging load. And as long as you're pushing yourself through that time frame, you do need to have this effort on a regular basis, every other day, every two days, what, you know, 48 hours recovery, etc. You have to be able to do this consistently. And during that time frame, as short as 12, as long as 45 minutes, whatever you want to build to, you have to challenge yourself. You can't just go through the motions. It has to be a progressive overload. Regular load that I can move and just 10, I could do this all day. 10 more, I could do this all day. That's just load. It's not progressive and it's not an overload. I have to do something where I'm like 9, 10, maybe I could do two more, maybe three more. That's a progressive overload. My body will change to that stimulus.
Yeah. Would you say that's in that water? Would you say it's in that zone where all of a sudden it's everything starts to slow down, even though you're pushing just as hard? Or would you go past that point?
Yeah. Yeah. So you have pain and you have discomfort, right? Like you're getting to a point where you're like, this is uncomfortable. Everything's burning and it's challenging. And maybe I'm having to hold my breath a little bit. My eyes are maybe getting a little pressured. My face is getting a little flush. Perfect. That's 80%. But when you're like 10. I could not do another one. You have to drop the weights. You get up, your eyes are bloodshot. You're like, holy shit, I almost blacked out. That's a 10. That's a 10 plus. That's too much.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody thinks, right? That's what they think they have to push to. You don't need that. Okay. But it has to be a challenge. It can't be the 3-pound pink dumbbells. Like, you, it's got to be more than that. So let's look at the Mr. Burns decrepit old man, right? And let's go through that list of all the stuff that I just talked about. Think of all the populations out there. Here's the list of things that the resistance training can do. What demographic needs that stuff the most? Those older people, yep. Right? They're losing bone density, losing muscle mass, losing posture, losing energy, losing cognition, like across the board. Everything that we could go and say, if you'd start resistance training, all this would improve, okay? That's the demographic that needs it the most. So if we're seeing that at 60, okay, somewhere in there where this is becoming a problem now, your gait's getting smaller, you're starting to fall a little bit, things are slowing down, you don't have the strength, you're having to rely on some other people to help you with some stuff. Okay, if you're not investing 15, 20 years before that, 60 is going to be rough, okay? But what kind of investment are we talking about? An hour to an hour and a half a week, man. It's not huge. It's not this like, I got to reinvent my whole life and prep all my meals ahead of time. If you want to lose body fat and change body composition, different story. Yeah. I'm simply talking about aging strong. And that can be done in as little as 12 minutes every other day. But you got to
push. This is why we talk about, like, I know I talk a ton on fat loss, but when we talk about actually like what this whole thing is for, like trying to get healthier, strength is the name of the game. Because everything you were just saying, like, that's the end goal. Now, when it comes to everything we're talking about, like, let's say somebody listening is like, all right, I got to see if they have a slot at the bunker where I can train. Like, what does that look like when somebody trains with you, or like if you have somebody in one of your affiliates, like, what does that usually look like to check off all these boxes that we're talking about?
So there's some pretty sound research that suggests for beginners just coming in, 2 sessions a week is ideal. Your body needs more time to recover from the good damage that we're about to put it through. When you progressively overload a muscle, a little bit of damage is done, but that's what helps it rebuild back, right? You chip away a little bit at it, it gets a little weak, and the body goes, whoa, whoa, we got to make that stronger. More muscle, more bone, more bone. So it builds back a little better and a little better and a little better and a little better. And you keep doing that over and over again. That's progressive overload, specifically with something called the SED principle. It's a specific adaptation to an imposed demand. The demand is this load. The adaptation is more muscle, better conditioning, et cetera, okay? If we do that on a Monday, for the beginning lifter, they need 72 hours before their next intervention, but until their body's completely recovered and ready to do it again. So Monday, Thursday is a great split for a beginner, and you're usually looking at 6 to 8 weeks of doing that. And after 6 to 8 weeks, then we could add a third day and maybe 48 hours now, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, or something like that. And we would do that for 2 or 3 months, 6 to 8 weeks, 12 weeks maybe at the most, okay? And then from there, we keep our 3 days of lifting, but then we ask our clients to start rucking, which is walking, but with load. They could wear a vest, they could wear a backpack, and they could wear a weighted fanny pack or a hip belt, depending on injuries or limitations. They can hold weights when they walk, okay? This is all a gradual, small amount of external load, 5 pounds, 7 pounds, 10 pounds. But that 10 pounds with every step, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, you're looking at 2,000 steps, okay, that you're going to go out for a mile or two. You're looking at 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 additional pounds that you have now moved. Granted, the range of motion is not huge, but it's extra stress on your body, which is extra conditioning, extra bone density, more muscle mass, better VO2 max, et cetera. So let's walk with a little bit of weight on days that we don't lift, and then let's lift relatively hard, you know, 35 to 45 minutes. That's our game plan and where we want to get everybody within the first 6 months of signing up with us. And if that's a 6 day a week, 3 days of lifting, 3 days of rucking, and then the other day they want to pickleball or golf or tennis or whatnot, and they can, you know, again, on the conditioning days, your rucking days, you're just walking. It's not like you're going to be so wasted you can't go and golf and play tennis or do other things on those days. But the lifting days are going to be good, challenging days where you probably might not want to do much other than that. Allow your body to recover.
Gotcha. So the rucking.
But again, we're going to build this up.
So the rucking is going to be more so like it's there, but it's not like wearing you down by the end of the walk. You're coming back and you're like, all right, that felt nice.
Right. Yeah. We call this unconscious load.
Gotcha.
Okay? It's a load that you put it on and you're like, oh, I feel that. And then you start to walk and you listen to your podcast and or you're like talking to your buddy. And pretty soon you don't even think. And every time we get done, I'm like, okay, take your vest off. And the clients are like, oh, the vest. Like they completely forget about it. And I'm like, that's the whole idea, is that you didn't even know you just moved 3,000 pounds on that walk. That's where the added value is for you. But it's just this little bit. So then people are like, oh, I'm going to level this up. I want to do 20 pounds, 30 pounds, 40 pounds. That's not the name. That's not the name of the game. That's not the point of rucking. It's just to put a little extra load for a good distance on a regular basis. So we have clients that walk daily. And I'm like, throw your vest on, 6 pounds on a vest. Do that walk, right? And we progress them from that. So if I can get you lifting 3 days a week, rucking 3 days a week, being active every day for 45 to 50, 60 minutes, something like that. And that can include, you know, gardening and yard work and any other activity that you wanted to swim or bike or Tai Chi or yoga or meditate, whatever. And just be active. Be active every day. Make that a regular part of your routine.
Yep.
Not only will they improve physically, maintain physically, age gracefully, but cognitively, the research supports all that, that they are drastically less likely to experience Alzheimer's, dementia, any of these other cognitive components. And that's where you can read books and read research. And what I find to be interesting, most people don't, yeah, right? Like they're going to read the abstract and go, okay, I got it. But I'm the one going through the forms, like looking at everything. How did they do this? That's where a lot of these TV shows and these audio books come in, because they give you the best of that in a quick clip or in a quick audio. And the message is now delivered, yep, right? Okay, now I get it. Okay? And that's why I tip my hat to Hemsworth. And as he's going through this, I don't know, I don't want to ruin it for everybody if they haven't seen it, but he gets some pretty life-altering information to the point where he stops making movies for like a year and a half. He goes, holy shit, this is life-changing information. He just finds out something that he's very likely to have a very negative experience at the end of his life. Yeah.
Okay? I mean, you could give it away. It has been out long enough where spoilers are like a thing of the past.
Okay. So he basically finds out, and Peter Attia is there. He does all of his blood work, and he tells him, like, hey, man, you're like 9 to 10 times more likely to get Alzheimer's. And he's, you know, 40 years old. So if you're 9 to 10 times more like he's going to start having cognitive decline and issues in his late 50s, early 60s, probably. And the guy's 40. And so you see him, he's like, okay, like he hears that. And then, oh, like it really hits him hard, to the point where he cancels the next Thor movie. Like he pushes everything back. He stopped. He's just like, I got to get this together. And so that was kind of the inspiration for the entire series. They film it, and that's like the fourth or fifth episode, but that was the first thing that happened. He had that, and he goes, oh, damn, what do I need to do to change so I can outlive this? And Peter goes, here's my book. Let's put this into action, basically. And so they go through cold therapy. They go through cognitive training. They go through independent outside study, get away from electronics. They go through resistance training, through VO2 max and testing, facing your fears. He gets up on a skyline. He walks across a crane in Australia. I mean, it's a great series. And the whole time they're breaking down all the science to you, so you understand it, right? And it's not some bald bearded guy sitting here yelling at you. It's some, you know, they're giving you good images, and they're everything comes up on screen where you're like, I can capture this information. And then at the end they go, so here's what you could start doing. As simple as turning the shower cold for the last 30 seconds, or as invested as getting a cold plunge and pop into 40 degree water for 3 minutes every day or every other day, could have this life altering change for your body. And they tell you why. Okay. Why meditation could really help you. Why having a death doula as you go through the later part of your life, where I'm like a fucking wreck at the end, just crying my eyes out going through this whole thing. I'm like, God, this was totally unexpected. The last chapter blew my mind. And it's this cradle to grave experience, mm-hmm, right, that they take you through, and he arms you with all kinds of stuff to go through this. And I'm like, this is so great. I hope they do another one. And then 2 weeks ago, he announces they're doing another season. I was like, yeah, because we need this. We need doctors. We need celebrities to embrace this content, not magic pills and not other bullshit. Like we need them to go, you guys got to put the work in, man. If you want to do this, you got to do it. But here's the information. Here's the things you got to eat like a grown-up, quit eating processed food. Drink clear liquid, don't drink, enjoy your your drinks on occasion, but not every day to extent, no more soda. Like it's things that we probably, most of us understand or recognize as we should. But when you find out the why, then it really connects and you're like, oh, that's what I'm doing to my body. Like now it makes a hell of a lot more sense. I'm not going to do that.
Right? Yeah, and I think that there's there's more of an attention span for it now. It feels like people actually like seem to really be buying in, especially the celebrities too. Because it used to be, I'm just going to get my money, tell me whatever to promote. But now it seems like there's almost like this interest of like, I care about my body. I want to promote the stuff that's actually like good for me.
I love that, because if you talk to someone that is endorsed by something, but you can tell they've never used it, you know, like, what's your favorite flavor? And they're like, I like all the flavors.
The red
they're
one.
Great. And you're like, you've never had any of those, you know? Yeah. And it's like, I want to seek out the company. I went to Eccentric and was like, I love this product. It's helped me a ton with my hip replacements. Can I make content for you guys? And they go, yeah. And now we're partners, right? I don't want to make money from them. I want to partner with a product I believe in. So I can tell all the other trainers and the others like, oh, you have clients with hip replacements? They can't deadlift anymore. Get this thing, right? And that was the purpose behind it. I want to endorse and tell people about something that I personally use and that I believe in and that has worked for me. And here's why, right? When you have a celebrity that embraces that, and then you see other celebrities, I won't name her, but there's one out there who claimed to have lost all this body fat and all this naturally. And turns out she's taking this pill. Okay. You can search this. I'm just not going to name the name. And you're like, oh, none of that's true. You actually just suppressed your appetite into losing a bunch of body mass. But what was the majority of that mass? Was that all fat? You lost so much muscle in that process. You just made yourself more sick, in my opinion. And there's research to support that. The less muscle mass you have on your body, the more sick you will become. Yep.
That's like one of the...
She did herself. Yeah,
that's like when I hear like somebody like Dr. Gabrielle Lyon talk about how under-muscled people are. And I'm like, this is what needs to be pushed a lot more, because it's not about getting smaller, smaller, smaller. Build some muscle.
I just picked her book up. My friend Renee works for Dr. Gabby. And I love that message. I love what she's pushing. We need more doctors to say, you know what, you should be prescribed instead of this medicine, go get some weight. So, and we need people to embrace that. But the problem behind that is there's no money in it for the pharmaceuticals, for the doctors, et cetera. And so when you've created a system, we don't have to go too deep into this. I don't want you to get political or whatnot, but when you get into a system where financial rewards are given for medications given out and people, you know, become consistently reliable on that income, it's hard for them to steer away from anything else. Maybe something that would be way better, right? And so it's like, you need somebody who's now independent or like Peter, independently wealthy with this to say, I'm a medical doctor and here's what you should really be told. And then Huberman does it. And then Lane Norton says it and Andy Galpin says it. And Joe Rogan has all these guys on there. And now millions of people have all heard that. And you're like, finally, some people that are able to deliver this message. And it's not just do this because, it's do this because this experience and here's why. And if you want that research, look at it here for yourself. And you can see that this is real. It's not my agenda. This is information that's there for all of you. And it applies to all of you and it can benefit all of you. But there's no secret pill to it, man. Like it just isn't so. We have to work for this if we want it. And I'd rather it be that way. I love the fact that I get to work for this. I'm proud of it now. If it was just handed to me, I'd take it for granted. I've already been there. I've already done that. I've had that experience. Without being dramatic, like I had that opportunity of someone looking at me and going, honey, you have cancer. And I'm like, what? I'm 36. Did you say I'm cancer? Right? Or at the time I was 29. Like you said I have cancer? I've never smoked. I have lung cancer. Like what? That didn't compute, you know, that doesn't make sense to me. I'm an athlete. I train hard. I do all this, but you know what I didn't do? I didn't eat healthy my entire life. Everything I ever had was out of a can or processed. Okay. I don't mean to throw my parents under the bus, but busy life and all this, we just didn't, that's the Midwest folks that came out here into California. And that's how we ate, man. I didn't know corn grew on leaves. I thought it came out of a can, right? Like I just didn't know. I didn't know any better. So when you are raised and your body develops with all that processed food in it, No wonder my thyroid doesn't work. No wonder my testosterone was zero for 7 years. No wonder I couldn't get rid of any body fat. No wonder I couldn't think clearly. Like that's the stuff that makes your body, and it's garbage that you just put in there. And so to reboot that and reintroduce it, your body can come back at any age, and anytime. You just got to put in the effort. Got to put in the work.
100%. And now I know we got a little bit past it, but I kind of want to pull it back to, I know you mentioned some really good equipment, because I know there's some people listening that are like, oh, I got like this issue, that issue, but I can't really go to a gym. I want to work out at home for whatever reason that may be. What were some of those pieces of equipment that you really prefer for your clientele and for yourself? Because I know I've seen the Anchor in a few of your videos, and I know you got a really cool gym set up there. Like, what are some of those that you really like find yourself programming over and over again?
Well, the majority of our clients, we need some type of band anchored system that they can put into their house. This can be a door anchor or whatnot. We use a handle called Angle 90 grips. They're the most comfortable grips because they're fatter in the middle and narrow at the end. So if you have any kind of arthritis or dexterity neuropathy, anything, any issues with your hands, they're very comfortable. A lot of people don't like to hang onto the bands. It can kind of hurt their hands a little bit if they don't have strong hands or if they have any of those limitations. So we'll use those handles with bands, anchor to a door or a stud with an eye hook on the wall. Like, you can kind of make an environment in your house and say, I'm going to dedicate this to fitness. Having something where you can pull and just start with bands is a great place. Progressive overload or accommodating resistance, another way to talk about bands, okay? That'll work for a little while. Nothing's gonna be consistent load. And I think the best thing you can get out there are these guys. These are power block adjustable dumbbells. They're pricey, okay? They are pricey. And you can get the sport version that goes 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21, 24. So you get 8 sets of dumbbells by 3-pound increments. Awesome for the first time lifter at home. You've got small jumps in weight. They're easily adjustable. Small little frame. That's them right here. These those bright blue ones right there. Okay. So that's 8 sets of dumbbells, and they take up that
one. And those are power blocks?
And you go, oh, they're power blocks. And they're $175, $200.
Way cheaper than 8 sets.
But it's 8 sets.
Way cheaper than 8 sets of dumbbells.
Yeah. And 8 sets is going to take up how much room, right? This is a shoebox. Okay. And then there's your weights. And then they make adjustable kettlebells as well, where you can have, and that's these right there. There's my adjustable kettlebells. And they have a lighter one that's 8, 10, 12, and 16 kilos, 4 kettlebells all built into one. So that's 18, 22, 26, and 35 pounds. So you have 3 kettlebells that you could deadlift and high pull or hinge or swing. And you have your dumbbells that you could bench press and row and raise and press and curl and extend. And then you've got your bands that you could chop or pull or push or press or lean or counter and lunge with. If you get that stuff, you're looking at $400, $450. You're going to spend $50 a month for a gym membership, go for a year. There's a $600 investment. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to share any equipment, right? So you don't get treadmills and bikes and ellipticals, but we're not talking about cardio here. We're talking about you getting strong. So I can build my own weights in my space. And maybe every year, keep taking that $50 you'd put into the gym and just keep piggy banking that until you get another $300 and buy a bench. And then you get another $300 and buy a step. And then you get another $300 and buy an Anchor system or something like that, right? And you can slowly kind of build over a couple of years to where you've got some really awesome equipment and you can train in-house.
And you get the best piece of cardio equipment, which I did see you have there, is the ski erg. That is one of my favorites. I miss it so much.
Yeah, I love the ski erg. My favorite one is the tank.
Oh, you got a tank.
We use that guy all the time. Yeah, and it only goes forward. That's what I love about it the most. My ski erg is all the way over there against the wall. And we've got our tank, all of our fat bells and our power blocks over there, glute roller, all of our adjustables. We have all of our flywheels. We've got two flywheels up on the rack up here. My Anchor system right there. The K-box is our floor base pulley and our flywheel. And then we've got some heavier power block or heavier kettlebells and fat bells over on this side, some sandbags, extra bands, our benches that come down off the wall. So yeah, I mean, this is just a collection of equipment that I personally love to use, but we looked at each of these and we go, we have a client that has a knee replacement. I'm going to be able to deload her when she comes back from her surgery. What do I need to get for that? We would get it. And it's just piece by piece by piece. My dad was the reason we got the tank, is that he couldn't walk without a walker. So I'm like, all right, the problem is he can't triple extend at the hip, the knee, and the ankle. So he needs the walker. How can I add load to the walker? That's not safe. It'll tip over. It'll land on him. He'll fall on top of it. So I need a walker that I could load that's really stable. And I found that. And I'm like, here we go. So let's just push that back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And we did that every Wednesday for about a month. And the guy didn't need the walker anymore. And then we started introducing sit to stands and some curls and some other upper body extremities. And he didn't need his cane anymore. And within, you know, 6 months, he was completely independent again at 78 with, or 76 at this time, with, you know, 3 times a week dialysis on kidney failure, anemic, diabetic, 2 hip replacements, a knee replacement, a broken lower back. Like, the guy was a train wreck. And built himself back to be completely independent, back to driving, back to walking, doing everything on his own. At a time when we thought his mind was starting to fade, he starts getting stronger in the weight room. And all of a sudden, all those issues and limitations all started to go away. It was crazy. Like, I thought, dad's slipping away here. We're going to lose him. And then all of a sudden, he reappeared. All the moments of fog, or where he would pause, or where he'd get lost, or he'd look past us. He'd have these moments where he'd look past us, and I'm like, Dad, are you all right? And he would like come back, and all that stopped towards the last year and a half of his life. And it's as anecdotal as that is, I don't have research to support a ton of that. You know, it just hasn't been done yet. I saw it. I experienced it. The stronger he got, the better he got across the board, everything. And that works for my dad, who was not a gifted athlete, who was not an amazingly hard worker in the weight room. He did a workout with me every week, and he did a lot of sit to stands and a little bit of band work on his own at home. 1 to 2 other days. Wasn't much. And he made huge gains. It can work for you. It can work for your dad, work for your mom, and work for your grandpa.
Yeah. It's never too late. That's one of the advantages we have working with people so frequently and just being on, like, the quote unquote on the front lines. Like, as trainers, we could see this stuff happening real time, and it's just absolutely wild.
Yeah. It's very rewarding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, very rewarding. I want to be respectful of your time, because I know you got to go soon. And I almost feel bad asking this as the last question, because this is like what we do at the very end. Every guest leaves a question for the next guest, because, I mean, you just dropped so much good stuff, and it'll be a little bit of a directional turn as far as like topics go, but should be okay. You ready for this? All right. So ready. This one comes from Mike Dola, and he asked, if money wasn't an issue, where would you live and why?
Oh, great question. So if you asked her, we'd be in Hawaii or somewhere warm on a beach, and we'd wake up to 77 to 81 degrees every day. And if you asked me, I'd be waking up to snow-covered cabins in the mountains and the woods with a lake and a river and deer and polar bears and whatever else I could be around in nature. And that's kind of why we live right where we live right now, is we're that way an hour and a half, we get her, and this way an hour and a half, we get me. And so without making her miserable and without making me miserable, I would have to find something that kind of gave us both of those seasons on a regular basis. And so, man, like Whitefish, Montana,
yeah,
would give us opportunities for warm summers and enjoyable, but cold winters and some snow. I don't know. I don't know if there's a place that I could experience some mountain time and then just a little ways away, have some beach, you know, where she'd be happy.
All I could think of is like California, maybe New Zealand, if you were going to get out of the country, you get a little bit of everything.
Yeah, that could be cool. Yeah, New Zealand, that's cool. That's a great idea. Yeah, I haven't traveled in that direction of the world at all yet, and I would love to, but what a great question. That's cool. Yeah, the financial restrictions of that kind of stuff, like if you could just dream up your, you know, your ultimate location, it's like, let's make that happen and now in reality, you know? And that's something that we discuss a lot. Like, our goal for us is we're kind of remodeling our house now over the next couple of years, piece by piece. But we really want a cabin in Lake Tahoe and just somewhere up in that rim of the lake where we could have a place to go spend a couple of months, you know, out of the year. And it's not huge, and it's just a little, you know, 4 walls and a place that we can get away, but we can still do this and still work and still do what we do, but do it up there and just be in that I am such a happier, more connected, more grounded individual when I'm near water and in the trees. And like, it's just a happier world for me. But she's like that when she's at the beach and around palm trees and around. And so it's like, I'd love to get to a point where we could have a couple of different locations in our lives that we could travel to and see that on a regular basis.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Hopefully we'll make those
awesome. And I got to say, yeah, I'm on your wife's wavelength. I'm all about the heat, the beach and all that stuff.
Beach. We, you know, here in Cali, like especially NorCal, we used to get 6 months of summer and then 6 months of winter basically. And now it's like 9 months of summer and a month of winter and like 2 months of fall. Like that's kind of how it goes now. And man, these cold days and the wind and the rain, I try to enjoy them as much as I can. I could probably end up in like Vancouver or Seattle or something like that someday, but she'd be miserable. Yeah. You know what I mean? I enjoy that. Kind of
stuff. Pacific Northwest. I don't know if I could handle all that rain. That'd be a tough one, but.
So do I get to leave the question for the next person now?
I mean, I usually ask afterwards, but if people want to look forward to the next one, let's fire away.
I got to go. Okay. If you could be the expert that you are now doing something else, what would that be? Like, would I be out teaching other people how to fly? Right. I like to teach trainers how to train. Would you want to be an instructor for flying, or would you want to, like, whatever you're doing now, if you weren't the awesome expert that you are now, what would you want to go and do and pursue and be? What would be that other thing that you could be just as successful?
That's a good one.
Love to see what people suggest to that, because a lot of times it's completely different. Like, well, I'd want to go be a football coach. And you're like, well, we spend a lot of time with football players in the weight room. Like, that's pretty close. But aviation or something like that, like, I'd want to make movies. I would love to tell stories, you know, and to make movies and to direct or something like that. You know, I'd love to be in cinema.
I'm with you on that. Mine would either be cinema or cooking, like culinary. Like, it would definitely be like being like one of those high level chefs. Because that's literally like my background noise right now is the Bon Appetit on YouTube, just keeping it going.
Nice. We do the British baking show. We love that one. Every season that comes out, I gain like 8 pounds because we go out and get cookies and donuts and we get stuff and we come home and cut it all up and sample it. And we're like, no, this one, I think this one's better than that one. And we rate them and, you know, we kick somebody off every week. Like our kids, we all have a great time, but. Yeah. And the sweets, they could get me
I love
too.
The baking.
That could be fun. I'd be here.
I love the baking shows because on the cooking ones, they can kind of put it together last minute and it'll look halfway decent. If you butcher the baking, it looks bad. But if you nail it, it's like pristine. So it's like no middle ground at all.
No. You get a handshake from Paul, you're doing something right, man.
If you get that gray fox giving you a smile, you know you're set.
Yep. This is great. This was a fun way to end it too. I appreciate the additional questions and what a pleasure.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Let's do this again. Absolutely. This is cool.
Now, before we wrap up, if anybody's listening and they're like, damn, Robert's awesome. Yeah. I want to see more of his stuff. Where could they find you?
My name, Robert Linkle, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. And then you could look at our website if you'd like at trainingtheolderadult.com. Awesome. I post regularly there. And then, we put up like 3 or 4 videos on YouTube every day or every week. I try to post on there regularly and put out good content that's actionable, right? Everybody, not just trainers, like everybody could hear it and go, okay, this is useful. You know, can I put it to practice on my daily life? Much like today, hopefully you got some good, you know, little nuggets here and there. This, I could plug this in, start to do this, or I'm going to try this new endeavor. I try to give you whys behind all of that stuff. And I'll take 15 to 30 minute blocks and do that on there. So yeah, hop on, subscribe and tell me what you think and request topics. And I'm all about it. I'm happy to deliver on that.
And if you guys did find any nuggets, like Robert just said, and you have somebody in your head right now that you're like, damn, they really need to hear that. Go and send this their way and say, hey, Brian and Robert had some good stuff. Just give it a listen and it'll help the podcast grow. They'll love you for it. Win-win. All right. Thank you guys so much for popping in. I will see you all same time, same place next week. Until then, go kick some ass. I'll see you later.
Thank you.